We'd like to take a second to thank our sponsor, Mouser Electronics. Not only does Mouser stock the world's widest selection of semiconductors and electronic components, they also offer an original content series called Empowering Innovation Together. Each month, EIT takes a deep dive into the hottest tech trends, and this month, the focus is on intelligent transportation systems. Check out podcasts, articles, infographics, videos, and more at mouser.com/empowering-innovation.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Reviews Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, what else? What else is it except preparing for Apple's iPhone 13 event or whatever they're going to end up calling that thing, right, Sherlyn?
Yeah, I feel like we're pretty set on that name, but that's I'm not putting any bets on it anyway. Yes.
We'll see how it goes. As always, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to the Engadget Podcast on iTunes. Leave us a review on iTunes, too. And also, we typically do live streams on our YouTube channel around 10 a.m. Eastern every Thursday. So join us for that. Join us for some Q&A. And, we'll get to know your names. That's always fun. Let's just head right into this Apple event thing. And to talk about it, we've brought on Julian Chokatu from Wired. Hey, Julian, how's it going?
Hey, I'm good. How's everyone here?
We're peachy. I'm running on like 4.5 hours of sleep, but that Matrix trailer will be right up. We'll be talking about it, after all of this. But yeah, I feel like, we are all in the tech media world, and it almost seems like everything revolves around the iPhone and certainly revolves around Apple. So this is the big event we're all waiting for coming next week, September 14th. Of course, we'll see a new iPhone. Who knows what it's going to be called? I would put money that it won't be called the iPhone 13, but what do you guys think and what are you expecting?
I'll start and then, I want to hear what you think, Julian, but I think a little bit of background too, right? I think like the whole industry, like Devendra says, is like waiting for the invites to come out. So we all got back from, what was it, the Labor Day weekend, and 12 p.m. on Tuesday, everyone got there. Well, everyone important anyway, got their invites.
Wow.
To this
Yeah, remind event. You only recently became important, Trillian. How dare you?
Anyhow, the invite has the Apple logo sort of floating on top of this mountain and water background, and the words on it are California streaming. So of course all of us are like, what does that mean? What could that mean? What surprises might they have in store? But given past history, this is almost always when Apple launches new iPhones. So yes, it's almost a given that iPhone should be the 13, or at least last time around was 12.
Whatever the next one is called, yeah.
One thing people thought might be the name was potentially 12S, but who knows? 13 seems more likely. Julian, what do you think? What would the name of the iPhone be? Do you think Apple is superstitious?
Yeah, no, I hope they're not, because I don't like it when they skip those numbers. And like,
why?
When they went from, because when they skipped 9, it was just like people were like, what happened to the 9? And
seven,
then
eight,
you have
nine,
to
no.
then explain. Yes, thanks. Nice, of course. But
also,
yeah, no.
Microsoft's reasoning for Windows, right? For their,
yes.
There is no Windows 9.
That's true.
So, yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Well, so, I mean, I think a 13 rolls off the tongue. I don't want them to go to 14 or 12S. I think the S stuff is also just
the S gets confusing.
Agreed.
Confusing, yeah. But yeah, no, I'm hoping for a 13, and I feel like it's going to be a 13. It seems like, but then you never know. They surprised us with Pro Max not too long ago, and that was,
names don't matter, like not at all. But I do think, like, and I brought this up last week, there's so many, almost every culture in the world, like so many folks are like, no 13s in buildings, no 13s like in general. So I do feel like there's a certain amount of cultural sensitivity there, even if it's just superstition. But I guess we'll see. What are you guys expecting, though? Because I feel like last year's model, the 12 series that brought in 5G wasn't a huge redesign, but I think the 5G was the big selling point. Are we expecting a big redesign this year? Because I know I also saw a leak. There's a leak for next year's phone already.
Yeah.
So everything's topsy-turvy.
Go ahead, Julian. I'll let you take this one first.
It doesn't seem like there's a drastic redesign. It's been a bit all over the place. I saw John Prosser's sort of leak, and he says there's all these things like a hole punch camera and different
for next year's phone. Yeah.
For next year's phone, right. So you know, I don't think there's going to be a dramatic change this year. It seems like it's pretty much the same, and that's fine because I think they feel and look like they really looked nice with the iPhone 12, and I think they did a really good job there. Of course, it'd be nice to see like a smaller notch and things like that, but you know, I think for the most part, it's going to be pretty much the same. But I mean, I think from what I think the biggest visual change is going to be is, you know, potentially that always on display, which kind of hinted at in that teaser for the invite. They had that like the clock and it was kind of glowing, so it kind of looks like an always on display, which Android has had for what, like a decade, I don't know. So finally a nice while. To see that coming. I don't know if iOS users have been clamoring for it, to be honest, because like it's so
it's
easy
not really
to,
the thing.
Yeah,
I never look at my phone and be like, I wish this was on more, you know. Because the really times like
my always on screen on the on my Android.
Yeah, I mean, I like
the worst battery life. Like, that's the thing. Like, how is that trade off for you guys?
I would say that an iPhone usually lasts me a full day, and most Android phones usually either last me a full day or if not more with it on. So I feel like it's not a huge difference. Like right now, I have a Nokia phone right now next to me, and it's telling me the time. So it's nice. I get it. I just don't. I feel like, you know, when it's going to come to an Android phone, people were super excited. But on iOS, I think most people might be like, all right,
it's like, you know, blah. Yeah. Is it so the thing I really just want to see is high refresh rate screens on everything, on all the lines. That's been on a lot of Android phones. That is the thing that I think for a lot of people, what do we do on our phones? We scroll. We scroll and we read and we look at other people's social media posts. And the way to make all that look smoother is to, you know, refresh that screen faster. So you get smoother scrolling, smoother everything. So, you know, are we expecting that this year?
I mean, I don't know how much, I'm sure you've, you know, paid attention to a lot of the leaks too, Julian, but I recently, just yesterday, spent a lot of time kind of like wading through all of the leaks that have been out. And I think the always on display is the most common one that keeps coming up. It's gained a lot of traction. Another one that keeps coming up is a 120 hertz refresh rate model that is most likely going to be on the Pro only, and potentially also only on the Pro Max. Let's backtrack ever so slightly. Let's backtrack a little bit, right? I kind of want to give you a full rundown of what we're expecting. So like last year, it seems like there will be four models of iPhone this year. Whether it's called the iPhone 13 or not, there will be an iPhone, say, 13 mini, regular 13, Pro, and Pro Max. So this is all but confirmed thanks to an FCC filing for updates to the MagSafe charger that listed four new phone models. So this is almost like not a big shocker, and it's almost guaranteed. Then you've got the always on display rumors. We've got the 120 hertz refresh rate rumors on the larger Pro model, maybe both the Pro models. We don't know. And then
let me just say, I hope they don't do that, because that's what they did last year with the camera thing. And I'm like, those Pro Maxes are big. Those are big half pound phones. I don't want to carry that.
Right.
Yeah.
But I no idea really. I think they might need the bigger space for more battery to support something like that. Who knows? You know, bigger batteries is one of the rumors too that people have been talking about. But there's also talk of some slightly smaller camera notches on the front, just slightly. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to see a punch hole display in this year's model, but maybe a refined design. I'm seeing some very interesting comments in our YouTube chat, which, you know, for the listener, you can come join us again, like the Vindra said, on Thursday mornings, that point out, by the way, funny things like Kylo Tech here says that always on displays barely affects battery life. I believe that's coming from the Android side of things. And I want to reiterate, yes, always on display and high refresh rates are definitely concerns for battery life, you know, dropping overall, but another report that's been widely circulated is that Apple might be using an LTPO, a lower power, more energy efficient display for the high refresh rate model. So there's a lot of screen stuff going on, basically, is what I'm thinking, right? Julian,
Let me just say, does LTPO cover OLED? I thought that was like LCD only.
I'm pretty sure it does. Yeah. At least that's okay. They're gonna sort of implement that engine.
Work on it.
We'll see. I see. But
Apple does.
I mean, yeah. it's kind of weird that they were one of the first to use 120 hertz display on an iPad yep. in 2017, and it just kind of was like, all right, we're just gonna put it on the iPad Pro line and nothing else, while mm-hmm. everyone else started adding it, and now they're kind of late to the game on a phone. But you know, it's nice to be able to see it. But yeah, that LTPO I think should allow it for the refresh rate to sort of change and probably go down to 60 when you're not doing anything like scrolling on the phone mm-hmm. Or playing a game. So that's nice. It just seems a bit like, you know, finally it's yeah. here. It's kind of strange that it took so long. Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. It's probably going to be more of an adaptive thing. That's another, I think, battery yes, saving yeah. measure that might be there too. Does this satisfy your 120 hertz itch, Devendra?
I mean, almost. First, I hope they get it. It doesn't even have to be 120 hertz. If it was like 90 hertz, just give us something more. Exactly. Give us something a little smoother than 60 hertz, because we are so used to 60 hertz screens, and there's a jaggedness to scrolling and to movement. And I also surround myself with high refresh rate monitors at times, so I like start to notice these things. But I also do think it's sort of like the jump to retina displays. Like, your eyes can tell when a screen is moving faster. And to me, that alleviates eye strain. It makes everything look better. I think ideally it should be adaptive. I think we're seeing Windows 11 is going to be supporting that too. That's going to be on like PCs as well. And, you know, that's the idea where you don't have to manually, you don't have to worry about always using the high refresh rate. And if you're doing something like just sitting and reading and not really moving the screen much, it could slow down and save some battery life. Adaptive is the way. That is the way we should do it. But we just need to have that gateway to higher refresh rates. Anything else, like a camera-wise, other feature-wise?
Yeah,
so I mean, many. But Julian, yeah. You go ahead and tell me what your favorite ones are so far.
I mean, I just can't wait because, like, I saw a leak that was saying that they're going to use improvements to sort of night mode where they improve mm-hmm. Astrophotography, which you could kind of mm-hmm. do on the current iPhones. But if you look at the sort of teaser invite thing, you know, they sort of focus, the camera sort of pans a little so slightly up into the stars. And one of the leaks was that, you know, if the iPhone camera detects stars in the shots, then it'll sort of change the algorithm to make sure that it's, you know, focusing on that more and maybe probably do a longer exposure or something like that. So that's exciting because, you know, Pixels being able to do astrophotography the past 2 years has been great. Like, I love that yeah. feature. And so finally being able to get something of equal caliber, if not better, on an iPhone would be really nice.
Speaking of stars, I think you guys talked about this on last week's episode, but a satellite communications mode or feature might be coming to the iPhone as well. It's one of the rumors. Of course, the early reports got everyone excited, but I think subsequently people found out. And my first take when I first read this was, oh, yeah, obviously this is only going to kick in when you have no cellular communications. But now people are like realizing that that seems to be the implementation, which is, yes, only available when cellular isn't available. So in rural places, which I think is a smart idea if it does happen. And according to the rumors, it uses a modified version of Qualcomm's, one of Qualcomm's modems. So it could, like, if the component's already available, then it sounds like it's feasible that this might roll out in this year's model too.
It would be nice to see, as I was chatting about with Dan, like, sure, when you're far off, you're camping or in the middle of the woods or somewhere mm-hmm. or hiking, it'd be nice to have some sort of connectivity. Right now, you can buy satellite phones and have yeah. a separate service that'll, you know, kind of give you that protection. It's not a feature that was really going to help a lot of people. You know, it is yeah. A very extreme edge case. But hey, if they can fit it in, that would certainly be like a thing Apple could use to like say, hey, Android doesn't have this. We can right. do this other thing. I was going to ask you guys about 5G because 5G was the big one last year. I think, sure, my iPhone 12 Pro is fast. I don't think it's necessarily always faster than previous models. It's not always faster than 4G LTE. If I'm standing in front of one of the big, nice 5G towers, sure, I'll get really nice speeds. That is a very rare thing these days. Is there anything on the phone side that could offer a better 5G experience, or are we still just waiting for the networks to catch up?
I don't think so. Like, I've been testing so many 5G phones, and it's become one of those features where it's like almost 4G LTE at this point for me, where it's like, I don't need to test this because, like, I don't have much to say, because it's either you connect to 5G and you have sub-6 speeds, which are sometimes great, but sometimes like normal, and it's
normally
not like
pretty awful, actually, for me.
Yeah. And you're not going to like notice, like, who exactly is downloading like a Netflix movie while you're walking on a street, like walking your dog? Like, maybe you are. I don't know. But like, for the use cases for me, yeah.
For the use cases I think of is like, if I'm putting my daughter, packing my daughter into the car, and oh my God, I forgot to download Paw Patrol or something to her iPad. And like, before a drive, I have like maybe a minute or two, and I just really want to get something in there. I don't want to rely on streaming. That sort of use case seems good. But yeah, again, it's not an everyday thing.
Yeah, it's like pockets of moments.
I agree. I think that like 5G has potential, but sub-6 is in general not very good. Like, I've been on T-Mobile for a while, and I don't know if I showed you this, Julian, the last time we were around each other, but apps just won't load. The internet just won't load anymore because 5G is that slow for me. It's so weird. I suspect it may have something to do with my carrier, T-Mobile, which, yeah, by the way, I'm not bashing them for any reason, just because our former parent company and still a 10% stakeholder, I believe, of Engadget's parent company, it's Verizon Wireless, but they do not have any say over editorial stuff. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I don't think T-Mobile's network, which is mostly sub-6, is that great. What you really do want, I personally feel, is millimeter wave, which is where you see the big differences. But that takes a much longer time to build out. And you know, reliable connections are much slower. But let's, all that said, going back to the iPhone 13, that's not one of the big things, you know, that rumors and leaks so far have us expecting. I think we can expect it. It's a given. I think they will all be 5G phones. Whether they'll have mid-band support, that's like the next big thing in 5G, will be the only, I think, thing in question.
What will that give us? Is mid-band better for like in-building 5G reception, I think, right?
It's like, think of it as halfway between sub-6 and millimeter wave is, I think, okay, what the right way to think about it. But correct me if I'm wrong, Julian, do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much that C-band support that's everyone's talking about, because AT&T and Verizon are supposed to be rolling out this C-band support, which is going to improve better 5G stability, speed, basically everything about 5G on those two networks specifically, and that's going to happen at the end of the year. But it's a huge question mark as to, like, you know, they've been saying 5G is going to be great by around now for like the past 2 years, and it's like,
yeah.
So I don't want to take a carrier's word at face value.
There's a lot of like we got to start looking like deeper what was going on with 5G. Like, the rollout was so hyped, and I've been seeing 5G demos since like 2015, I think. Like, we've been seeing them for a while. Actually, I think even my first Mobile World Congress, like, there were demos at like in 2012. The max speeds, like, the tech is capable, but that is not what everybody's seeing. That's not the use cases people are seeing. And I do think, like, the ultimate thing is sort of like the ultra low latency stuff people have talked about, where, okay, you could use 5G for VR, you could use 5G for like really responsive gaming or something like that, could be a thing. Are we seeing any of that yet, guys?
They're shipping stuff on phones. Like, I recall, I think it was the Pixel 5a, you know, has like Stadia, like, pre-built, and they're like highlighting these experiences. But like, I just don't see the real benefit. Like, unless you're on millimeter wave, which again is kind of hard to tell when you're on millimeter wave, because you have to be on a specific block on like, and find the node. And so, like, I'm not sure who's hunting for millimeter wave nodes out there, but when you're at home, chances are most people aren't going to like.
Yeah, we are.
But when you're at home, you're probably not going to turn off Wi-Fi and switch to 5G.
Yeah.
So like, then you have to consider, oh, I'm paying for 5G and I'm paying for the right amount of data and everything. So it's just too much for the average person to think about, that I don't think it's a big deal.
I feel like we got to move on from iPhone stuff, just because it seems like...
You mean we got to move on from 5G stuff? There's still more iPhone stuff 5G we haven't... Stuff.
What other iPhone stuff you got? What else?
I'll just quickly run through the rest of the stuff, right? So in addition to like improved astrophotography or an automatic astrophotography mode, there's also potentially portrait video recording mode. And the hardware of the cameras themselves are supposedly going to increase. I think the ultra-wide cameras themselves are supposed to get a boost with better sensors and lenses. As for the two other main characters, cameras, we're not that sure they're going to get significantly upgraded just yet, but at least on the ultra wide cameras, you should see hardware improvements. And then as for the overall design, like Julian said, there's not going to be much change. There's some sort of refinement, I believe. Perhaps a grippier texture is one of the rumors that came out, I believe, of Max Weinbach, who has been leaking a lot of this stuff in the past. But apparently Apple is also working on titanium frames for some time in the future. We don't know. And then, you know, the rest of the stuff that we talked about for iPhone 13, I think, yeah, we already said a faster chip is almost a given. So yes, expect a faster chip. And maybe more other components. We don't know. But there will be other devices, and I think that's what you're trying to get us to, right, Devendra?
I mean, I hope there will be other devices. That's what it sounds like. Are we expecting a new iPad at this point? Or usually it's like another event, right? It's usually a month after. So
I almost want to say, so one of the comments in our YouTube chat too asked if there might be a new MacBook Pro redesign. And one of the smaller rumors floating around is that, yes, there might be a MacBook Pro with a flatter look that's a bit more reminiscent of the MacBook Air, I believe, might be coming. But according to the timing reported by Bloomberg's Mark Gurman on that potential redesign MacBook, it's more like between September and November. So this is, if anything, the one that might be slated for a little later in the year. Everything else that we're expecting, though, include the Apple Watch Series 7, the AirPods 3, and yes, new iPads. And we can start with the iPads, right? Because new iPads, I feel like, probably going to be a given at this point. We're talking about the entry level iPad, and at this
just
point,
the base
already,
model.
The base cheaper, not the Air and not the Pro. This will be like the iPad 9 at this point, if it does launch next week. And the leaks don't seem to indicate that a lot will be changing visibly. We're not going to see. One thing, by the way, that's not coming to the iPhone 13. People were like, early on, were like, maybe there's going to be an in-display fingerprint sensor. And now people are like, nah, sorry, fam. We couldn't make it work for this year. I personally wouldn't want an in-display fingerprint sensor on an iPhone. I don't need it just yet. Julian,
Even when you're masked up? Yeah.
I know. I agree. I think fingerprint sensors are a thing, but I've been an Android user where they've never really gone away. So I like, pixels. Yeah.
I've looked at the iPad rumors, and it seems like it's a carbon copy of the past three from the past couple of years, which is fine. It's not great in a way because, yes, they're still one of the best tablets that you can buy at that price. But at the same time,
I mean, the best. Let's not.
Yeah,
here.
Sure. Like, okay.
That is the tablet you're going to buy if you're buying one under $400.
But it's becoming a part. It's almost like, you know, it's just becoming complacent. It's like they know they have a comfortable lead, so they don't need to do much there. Whereas there are Android tablets that are cheaper or in that price range that look nicer, that might, they just don't have the software to sort of back it up. So like, Apple can do whatever the heck they want, but it would be nice for them to sort of maybe try a little more and innovate a little bit there, because I just think, you know, most people are probably going to be buying that one, and for it to just stay so stagnant is kind of maybe a little disappointing for some people, but it's a minor nitpick.
It's a hard thing because it's sort of like they have perfected the entry level tablet in a way, right? Like my daughter has one. She has the 6th gen that we use for like when she's eating food and she needs to like watch a show, otherwise she'll freak out, or she's in the car. And it is that use case. It's that use case of just like, you want to bring a little video around with you or somewhere. Not if you want more power, you get the iPad Air, you know, right? And if you want really pro level power, you get the iPad Pro. The plain iPad is just here to be cheap, because I bought mine 2 years ago for like $230. These things retail for $330-ish, and they get cheaper all the time. So I almost wonder if, like, would you think a price cut would be better? Like, okay, keep it the same, but make it $299, you know, permanently or something.
That would be nice. I also do wonder if they're maybe not really changing it much, because they might think that the design with bigger bezels and is just more comfortable for a lot of people and familiar. And maybe on a tablet, it makes more sense to have an option that's like that with a with the physical button that people are used to, as opposed to maybe switching to that all gesture design with Face ID or Touch ID on the side, just because it's more convenient. Because, you know, it's kind of like how they have the iPhone SE, which is sort of that phone for people who hate the iPhones with Face ID and gestures and no buttons and all of that. So it could just be that it's perpetually going to be that. But I do think a price cut is for sure warranted. I think it could go to $250. That'd be nice.
That's the thing, right? Apple will never do that.
No,
because that's the thing. What they want is they want like higher prices per unit or something. What is the earnings term for that? But average price point, they want that to stay relatively high. Anything else you want to add about iPad, Sherlyn?
Some of the rumors indicate that, like Julian said, looks externally like a carbon copy, but you know what we can expect are internal changes that you should pretty much expect every year anyway, which is newer processor and more RAM in this case. Some hints seem to indicate better pencil support, but more specifically, the iPad Mini 6 is also something that has been floating around as a rumor. I mean, I love the iPad Mini series. They're just cute little 8-inch tablets. But the iPad Mini 6 is the one that, if it does get released next week, is slated for a more iPad Air-ish redesign. Don't know if it will for sure happen, but if that is true, the other rumor that's floating around is a smaller pencil might also be in the works. To work with that little tablet. So that's your iPad rumors for next week. I personally think we will see new iPads. I just don't know how much change to expect from them.
I don't know how much we need, really. Like, for me, it's like the base storage. That could be the big thing. Like, if Apple all of a sudden is like, no more, it's still 32 gigabytes, I think, on the iPad. Like, if that was just 64, like, that would be life-changing, I think, for a lot of people. Certainly for my daughter's, like, downloaded Disney Plus shows and stuff. Like, that sort of thing would make a huge difference.
Well, Devendra, How else are they going to sell you more iCloud storage? Come on.
Right. Well, it's not even iCloud storage. It's like I need stuff on my device because I'm driving and I don't always have cellular. You know?
You're right. The starting is 32 gigs. I just checked the website. iPad 8 still starts at 32.
I mean, it would also be nice if they just included, like, if this time around they added a better way of pen stylus storage on those two. Yeah. The Mini in. Because, like, at this point, it's like, okay, you're like the best at tablets. How is your entry-level stuff still, like, I have to find a place to store this pencil or
just super glue
get a case or something? Yeah, super glue it.
Do not super glue your stylus, people. That is not a good strategy.
Do not super glue anything to any device. Anyhow, they're speaking of not much change coming in new products, the Apple Watch Series 7 is another device we're expecting next week that is not necessarily going to get big updates. The most, I think, common rumor that's floating around is that they'll have larger cases and screens, and therefore, correspondingly, you get new apps and faces that will make better use of the increased space. So the larger cases, instead of 40 and 44, I believe, millimeters that the current models offer, the Series 7 is supposedly going to come in 41 and 45 or 46 size. So I don't know how I feel about that.
Do we think is that going to break the band support? Because that's kind of been the nice thing on Apple Watch so far. Like, if you have a band from the first Apple Watch, you know, they still connect to the new ones. Yeah.
I don't think they'll break it, but I'm not sure. Julian, what do you think?
That would be a very bad move.
Yeah,
that would
be a bad move.
I feel like they wouldn't want to do that. But
it wouldn't be too difficult, I think, to keep that little housing for the strap the same while still increasing the case size just ever so slightly. Because also another thing is they're giving us thinner bezels around the watch display, supposedly. So, you know, more room to do things and look at things and show
they,
you
they
more
could get an extra info. Millimeter of space. Like, by shaving those bezels down a little. Isn't part of the rumors, too, like, we're expecting maybe a flatter design, like, more like the iPhone 12 series, yeah?
Yep. So, like, flatter edges. The edges are not so curved and rounded. So, yeah, slight redesign as well. Without having seen them in person, I can't tell you, like, what a flatter redesign will necessarily mean day-to-day. But certainly that's one of the rumors. The other rumors about the Watch Series 7... were earlier about potential body temperature sensors and blood glucose monitors on board. But from analysts like Ming-Chi Kuo or Mark Gurman, both seem to have said that those features are more likely to come in later series than the Series 7 because it seemed like they weren't able to make it onto this one.
Will we ever see an Apple Watch Pro, you think?
I don't know, but I think the one rumored variant that people keep coming back to is a rugged Apple Watch.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking of too. Like so an that, active, okay. The Galaxy Active type deals, yeah.
I mean, they kind of like played around with the SE last year, so they're not shy of like trying different things with the watch. So, I mean, that'd be cool to see something different. I think this time also we're expecting slightly longer battery life if the cases are just bigger in general. But that would be, I think, the biggest benefit if you wanted to upgrade, because I don't think you can still really get anything more than a full day. And if you wanted to sleep track, you probably usually still have to toss it on the charger. So that's probably a highly requested feature.
I will say that the other report or rumor that keeps floating around about the watches, and this is going to be a magic word that I keep repeating throughout this episode, new chips, new processor.
New chips.
They're gonna be faster. Faster.
Podcast title. Always. Yeah.
So better performance, like maybe like slightly more responsive, but like to Julian's point, I think battery life and faster charging would be two of my biggest wishlist items for the Apple Watch, and hopefully the Watch Series 7 gets them. I don't know yet.
Gotcha. I'm wondering, will they ever take this tech and just bring it to pets? Give us the Apple pet collar.
It's
going to happen.
Just use an AirTag.
They'll build it into AirTags. Yeah, exactly. Oh my God, Julian has the same thought.
Put AirTags. They got to make the AirTags smaller, though. Like, just started playing around with those. I shoved one into my wallet, and I'm like, why? You should not be this thick to be in wallets. I don't know. Anything else you guys want to add about the Apple stuff? I know we like talked about before the show, Apple TV updates, and personally, like, I would not expect that. We got a new model last year, or at least a new
remote
model.
Earlier this year, right?
Is it earlier this year? I don't even know
anymore. It was April 2021, I think, when we reviewed 4K.
Okay, yeah, so there you go. No, none of that. And also, there's not much for them to change on the box level, because, it supports, like, all the audio and video stuff they need to right now. It's the remote they need to fix, and I think they fixed it pretty well.
There's also, like, all the AirPods rumors.
Yes, exactly.
Which I don't know how to feel, because everything points to something that's like a AirPods Pro look, but then the actual buds are not like silicon. Like, they're just like the traditional AirPod design, which I hate.
It's a better ergonomics.
We're hearing like the better, like the in-ear design will be very similar to the AirPods Pro, but the actual features, like supposedly there's some debate around whether or not active noise cancellation and spatial audio will be coming to the regular AirPods 3, if that's what they're called. But I don't know, Julian, did you see that one image that was leaked, I think, in February of them in their case, or actually slightly outside of the case, where the carrying case just looks a little taller, I think, or wider?
Have you seen that they're using like the ear tips in those? Because I've been all over the place where it's like they're not using ear tips and they're using like a traditional normal AirPod design. So if it's that, if that's the case, I'm going to hate it. But
the one I'm hearing, the one that I've seen with most credence is that, there might be ear tips. But who knows? Honestly, like maybe there are options. Maybe it comes in the box or something. I don't even honestly don't know at this point. But AirPods 3, long overdue. I think if we don't see them next week, people might riot.
I mean,
guess what they have? Guess what they have? A new chip.
probably the new Bluetooth chip. Anything else you guys want to add about Apple stuff? I do feel like, this, I'm waiting for them to surprise us, but in terms of current products, I don't know.
I mean, it seems like a entirely like small upgrade for every single product category this time around. I mean, obviously an M1 Mac Pro that's like larger will be a nice change.
Sure.
But it doesn't seem like there's one thing that's like, oh my God, that's completely different. But you also never know. They sort of surprise you with a lot of the software features at these events. And so there might be something crazy there that they'll announce. But products wise, I think the most disappointing thing is that we're just not hearing much more on HomePod stuff, which if you're someone who's trying to outfit your entire home with a smart voice assistant that's not Google Assistant or Alexa, what the hell is going on there?
Like, it's poor choices. Poor choices.
Did they kill the big HomePod? That's
discontinued. Yeah. They just have the Mini, which is fine. I think the Mini is perfectly capable and definitely more appropriately priced. It's just you still have far fewer HomeKit-enabled devices than compared to the other ecosystems. And yeah, I mean, it just seems like it's not moving as fast as we should be seeing it move, but maybe they'll surprise us.
It would be nice to see more HomeKit stuff. I have Arlo cameras around my house, and some of them are HomeKit enabled. So on my Apple TV, I could be like, show me the basement doors, and it pops up in a picture window on Apple TV, which is super useful if you want to spy on people or see like if people are approaching your house while you're watching TV. I would love to see more of that. I'd love to see like maybe more features from iOS 15, right? Like when they had their product event earlier this year, that seemed like the big thing. A lot of cool new features in iOS 15. I've been testing out the public tests, and it looks good. It feels good. And lots of features that generally like make life a little easier, I think. I don't know what you guys, your perspective has been on that.
Yeah, I have been living with the Android beta a little bit more than I have with the iOS 15 beta, but I'm about to make the switch back because, of course, gearing up for Apple Week, I need to get reacquainted. But we were just saying that a lot of these updates seem to be minor incremental changes on the hardware side. I do think that what Julian sort of hinted at is probably going to be true, which is software is probably going to be where we see a lot more of the surprises. iOS 15, we already more or less know what to expect, but there might still be a kind of new feature that Apple will throw in there. Who knows? And then watchOS 8, I think, just also seemed to me like a very minor update over the watchOS 7 software. So not sure what's going to happen there. If Apple might show off something also next week for the watches, but everything else seems fairly incremental on the hardware side. Mm-hmm. Julian, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm in the same boat as you. I've been trying to write this Android 12 beta thing, and I'm going to just now switch over to the iPhone to get on that.
Yes,
but so I don't have too much of an experience with iOS 15, but I'm most excited for setting up all those focus features, which is like those profiles.
Oh, those are great. Those have been great.
Yeah, so that's probably my most my favorite iOS 15 feature, because I'm pretty sure I thought of that like 5 years ago. And
oh, screw off!
I totally did. I should have patented it.
Anybody? Yeah, we all did, buddy.
Such
come
a
on,
genius, Julian. Sure, what a genius you are.
Is there anything else you want to mention, Sherlyn, about this?
Yeah. Yes, I do, which is that the reason I have been knee deep or neck deep in sewage water, no, in rumors and reports.
Don't leave your building. Yeah.
Is that I have I am working on a What to Expect story that not only it covers everything we've gone through, but has some other details as well, with all the links to all the rumored pictures and everything. A video will be up on our YouTube channel soon too, so you can also check that out. If not later today, then, you know, first thing tomorrow. So be sure to watch Engadget. That's all I'll add on that issue.
All right, Julian Chokatu, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find you on the internet these days?
You can find me at Julian Chokatu. That's JulianChokatu. And I'm always on Wired.com, which is where we test all of our gadgets and write about all the tech news as well. So check out Wired.com.
Hey folks, I'm interrupting the regular podcast here just because some news dropped right after we ended up recording. Facebook unveiled their first smart glasses, the ones they've been teasing for a while, the collaboration with Ray-Ban, and these are called the Ray-Ban Stories. They're starting at $299, and they have two cameras, they have speakers, they have microphones. They sort of like bring together all of the tech we've seen in smart glasses so far. So to talk about these, let's chat with Carissa Bell from Engadget, who normally covers social media for us. Carissa, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm very tired. I know you're very tired, but I'm glad this, like, we're past this news. And I know you have thoughts about these smart glasses. So I kind of gave the basics here. If you've seen the Snap Spectacles, if you've seen the Bose Frames, those are like glasses that only exist to pipe audio along the like headband part or the earpiece part. This is combining all of that. It can take videos, it can take photos, you can listen to audio, you can take calls with it. I think what's most interesting is that they look pretty much exactly like a normal pair of Ray-Bans. The Wayfarer model is only 5 grams heavier than the current Wayfarer, the dumb one. So I think that's all impressive, but what is your main takeaway, Carissa?
Yeah, they definitely are impressive. I think that it was really smart for Facebook to partner with a company like Ray-Ban, which is really popular, not controversial, you know, especially among younger people, I think.
Not yet.
Yeah, true. You know, I think, you know, I have mixed feelings about these because on one hand, as a gadget, like, it's pretty good. I enjoyed using it. On the other hand, it's Facebook, and Facebook camera glasses just, you know, feels a little creepy in some ways.
I feel like that is the main takeaway for everybody, because I'm looking at the reporting all over too. And a lot of people have done something that I was just thinking of as well. Like, while you're recording, while you're taking photos, there's a little light on the front of these cameras that support, it's supposed to like make people aware that you're doing something. I think Google Glass had similar features. But if you just put like a piece of masking tape over it or something, like, it is very easy to just hide that LED entirely. And then the cameras are just so subtle on the sides of these glasses, especially on the Wayfarer. It's easy to like not even notice they're there. Basically, these things are perfect for just spying on people and easily, you know, getting photo and audio onto social media or wherever. That seems like this isn't only a concern for Facebook and these smart glasses, but it seems like a big issue that maybe they haven't fully thought out. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's valid. Certainly, I mean, even years ago when Google Glass first came out, I know there was a lot of concerns with this kind of stuff. I think anytime you have a camera that doesn't look like a camera, you know, that opens up the door for a lot of privacy concerns. You know, at the same time, I think like camera technology has gotten so cheap, so small. Like, if you want to have a little spy camera, you don't need these to do it. There's lots of other ways. You know, at the same time, I think
you could buy them on Amazon now for like 50-70 bucks.
Yeah, exactly,
right? Like, just a pair of glasses with cameras. Yeah,
but you know, again, like, the fact that this, you know, Facebook's name is on the box, you know, I think that definitely kind of just makes it seem all that more noticeable, you know, these kinds of issues. I definitely did feel like a spy at some points, you know, you walk around the park and you're like,
yeah,
snap, like,
you felt like you were on the Americans or something. Yeah, I kind of got that. They're very like James Bondy. The branding is an interesting point, because the only place Facebook, the name, shows up on these things is like outside the box. It says Ray-Ban X Facebook. But even then, Facebook is in really small print. The case that charges these things doesn't say Facebook on it. The frames don't say Facebook on it. Clearly, I think Facebook itself is aware of its own issues around doing this. So they're like, it is almost like the parasite on top of Ray-Ban's brand trying to like inject some smart stuff in here. That all seems like a little cynical to me. Like, rather than confront the issues it faces as a company, because we've talked about this, Facebook is just awful when it comes to privacy. And I don't know if we can trust them as a company, just looking at what they've done with their social network. Now we're going into entirely new territory, where I'm personally like a little afraid of smart glasses as a category altogether too, because it makes certain things too easy. You know, right now, sure, we all have cameras in our pockets with our phones, but you have to take your phone out. You have to like do an action, right? You have to like do a little thing. Somebody's holding up their phone. We know what they're doing. Somebody tapes over the IR or the big LED on the front of these glasses, and you don't know what they're doing. They could have cameras on it. They could be recording. They could not. People walking into public restrooms, to me, would just feel weird wearing these things and just having the cameras out there. So I feel like there are a lot of social rules. There's so much stuff, right? Social media, we weren't prepared for. We were barely prepared for smartphones with cameras. I think we're absolutely not prepared at all as a society for glasses that are smart and have cameras and can instantly upload video, you know?
Right. And I think that's a great point. And, you know, I wrote a story kind of along these lines last year when Facebook, I think it was last year anyway, when Facebook first kind of showed off some of its research around Aria, which is, you know, its research project for glasses that actually have AR built in. And, you know, I think right now, like, the Ray-Ban glasses, they're still relatively dumb. You know, there's a camera, it has Bluetooth. You know, it's not, at the end of the day, like, the form factor is different, but it's not that much different from what we have now. I think where this is going to get even stickier, if you will, is when you have, you know, glasses that maybe could have eye tracking or have more right. advanced features, maybe facial recognition, and kind of actually have these kind of like smarter, more powerful capabilities. I think that's what makes me really nervous anyway.
I mean, I'm nervous about all this just because I see what smartphones have done to us. Most of it's good, but there's a lot of bad out there. And cross that with social media, where the power of too much information all at once, too quickly. As human beings, we're not built to parse information like that. So now add in, you know, instantly capturing photos and video right from your glasses. That just seems like a little tough. I agree. The AR glasses are going to be an even bigger issue. And I don't. Yeah. Again, Facebook is not the company to kind of figure this out. I've reviewed all the Oculus stuff. I think when it comes to VR, I can easily segment what Facebook is doing there, because the Oculus Quest is a big honking thing you put on your face. You're in VR. It's not crossing much into the real world yet. It is not like, it's not invading society. But these glasses will. You'll be wearing them. You'll be out in the world. You'll probably see AR advertisements or something hovering in the air. Who knows what they'll do with the data they capture from that. Yeah, I don't know if Facebook as a company has earned our trust in this regard. It sounds like you feel similarly.
No, I don't think they have at all. I mean, I think that they are trying. Like, they definitely seem to have sort of thought through the privacy piece as much as they do. You know, the app, when you you know, when you first use it, it kind of walks you through all the privacy settings. Like, all that stuff is very clear, which I appreciate. You know, at the same time, like, they also automatically opt everyone into, you know, storing the transcripts of your voice recordings for, you know, sharing, like, the additional information back with Facebook. You know, and I think, like, that's probably, you know, if they really, really care, they would have that stuff off by default. And then, you know, there's also these, all the stuff that you have, you know, with that happens with any other voice assistant as well. You know, I mentioned this in my story, but, you know, I went to go back in the app and look through the transcripts, and I'd only ever used the Hey Facebook command twice, but there was already 4 transcripts in there. So there was at least 2 occasions where it had thought I had activated the wake word or something, and they weren't anything. One was not like a just nothing. One was just like, yeah, it was the words yeah, yeah. So it wasn't anything too alarming, but still, I mean, it shows you that, you know, these things aren't perfect. When you think about, you know, thousands mm-hmm. of people having these glasses, you know, there's a lot of things that could happen there.
Gotcha. I totally hear you. And let me just say, like, okay, separate the Facebook of it all, which I think is terrifying. As products, here's what's maybe a little more scary, is that they have done a very good job of boiling down all the existing smart glasses tech. So it has built-in speakers along the arms. They sound pretty good. Surprisingly, like, better than I thought they would. For music, it's fine for putting on, like, light tunes as you're going for a jog, especially if you don't want to put anything in your ears and, like, maintain some sort of situational awareness. The photo quality, not so great, but the video quality looks really good to me, especially the first-person stuff. It is very smooth and stable. I was shooting, like, some video of me playing with my daughter, and me running around, pushing her on the swings looks just really good. I think there's really no other way for me to capture that footage. So for parents, I, you know, maybe even pet parents, it seems like a good thing. I know people, I've seen people on YouTube, like, put GoPros on their heads, right? Like, they have the GoPro thing to capture first person video. And, you know, you get some decent looking video like that. But even then, you see a GoPro, right? You know, okay, this person is recording. There's, like, a social awareness there that there isn't when you're just having it in your frames. So yeah, good product. I don't know if we're ready for it yet. These things start at $299. They're going to be available in, like, a variety of different styles. The basic Wayfarers, the bigger Wayfarers, what are the other styles? Like Meteor.
Yeah, those the sort of round
looking ones.
Yeah, those are the ones I would want.
So, I mean, they look cool. They do look cool. And they all look good. The Wayfarers feel great to wear. Like, I could see wearing these all day, which is what they want and is what's kind of terrifying about it. At starting at $299, you're only getting, like, normal shades. You're not getting polarized lenses, which I know was a problem for you, certainly a problem for me. If I'm buying really expensive sunglasses, I want polarization that reduces glare, that just generally makes everything look better. You know, but you want polarization and full UV protection with any shade. So you got to pay more for that. You have to pay more for prescription. You have to pay more for transition lenses, of course. So these are going to be really expensive things too. But would you see yourself buying these or something like these, Carissa?
So I don't know. I mean, that's a hard question because I, when I was using them, you know, I thought, like, it's not a bad product. Like, I, like you said, it's great for going out for a walk, a little run. The first person video is, you know, does have some pretty like compelling use cases. So, you know, on one hand, I kind of thought, maybe, you know, maybe I would think about this. You know, I do, you know, but I do have hesitations on, you know, the privacy stuff, and all the other issues we talked about. So I don't know, but, you know, I wouldn't tell anyone not to get them. You know, if you go in and, you know, you're okay with all those things and you're still excited about them, then I think like it's probably, you know, having used spectacles, use Bose frames, I think this is the best version of, you know, this kind of product that I've seen.
Yeah, I can feel that way. I do. I feel like I'd be upfront with people if they're considering it. Like, think about what would happen, you know, what would happen if you walked into a bathroom and you had a video camera, you know, with you. Would you feel weird? Especially like a men's bathroom where urinals are usually just kind of open and out there. Yeah, there's a lot of things that would feel weird if you're at the urinal and look down and somebody's like, what are you capturing with the glasses you're wearing on your face? I feel like there are a lot of privacy issues there. But we have not even, you know, like we've only begun to scratch the surface on that. So I guess we'll see. Anything else you want to add, Carissa?
I was just say that, you know, the other thing is like Snapchat has been doing this for 5 years now.
Yes.
And they obviously have not had as, you know, a ton of success with the product of spectacles. I think spectacles have been, you know, I've actually liked spectacles.
Yeah,
I think,
yeah.
You know, it's one of those, it hasn't really been clear what they're for. I think, you know, there's still like a lot of work that they could do. But, you know, the camera glasses, you know, these sort of social media first glasses like have been out there for a while. And, you know, we haven't heard like a ton of, you know, crazy stuff of like super egregious violations of privacy with people wearing them. I'm sure like that stuff has happened. I feel like we're talking about now because it's like Facebook and it's Ray-Ban. So we're kind of assuming that this is going to be more popular. People are going to be using this more.
I mean, at the beginning, Snap Spectacles, like you had to like line up and get them at those weird physical kiosks, right? Like they were a little, they were hard to get. Even now, like, I think it's, can you just go and order it? I don't know, like, how that process works. They don't seem very popular. Like, when I was living in New York, I never saw people wearing Snapchat stuff. I only saw it when I went to San Francisco for work. So it just never seemed to, like, get much of a broad appeal outside of, like, the tech elite folks or the, like, really hooked-in social media kids. Whereas these is like, these are going to be in stores, you know, these are going to be places where they sell Ray-Bans. I feel like a lot of people are going to like the idea of like, hey, I want to work out and listen to little music or podcasts. It sounds good for that. I guess we'll see. I'm just a little terrified by this, but we'll see how this all goes. Thank you so much for joining us to chat about this, Carissa. Where can we find you on the internet?
On Twitter, Carissa BE.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's move on to some other news. And come on, folks. The only thing that matters in this world, in my life right now, is the new Matrix Resurrections trailer, which just dropped the morning as we're recording this. This is the, you know, fourth film in the series. It is crazy to even say this. Directed by just Lana Wachowski. It has been weird because I'm a big Matrix guy. Okay, like, when that first movie came out, I was saying, like, this movie is incredible and is changing everything. And with 20 years of hindsight, I cannot think of a single movie that has changed Hollywood and movie going as much as The Matrix, for better and worse, you know? And I also, I just want to say this, unapologetically, I love the sequels. and I know they have their issues, and I think they were received badly initially, because I distinctly remember going to the theaters in college and turning around as there was like the orgy scene in Zion, and people just did not know what to expect here. Yeah.
No, I just had it was a like flashback
the rave slash like sex scene that's there. I love those movies so much. I am glad that there has been a lot of like analysis online and among critics and stuff of the sequels. As messy as they are, I think they're like bold, ambitious movies. I cannot wait to see whatever happens here in The Matrix Resurrections. What are your thoughts, Sherlyn?
I saw the trailer because, full disclosure to everyone listening and watching, Devendra made us all watch the trailer before this episode. And
it's called doing your homework, Sherlyn. Come on.
Well, that, but also I you know, haven't even caught it. Like, I got up and started preparing for the podcast. I haven't, mm-hmm. like, that wasn't one of the first things I did. But I liked the original Matrix, the first movie. Second one was fine. And then the third one, I kind of I'm still not sure if I saw it. Honestly, like, I either blacked out or, like... So, like, at some point,
blacked out. Yeah.
I might have wiped it from my memory. I need to re-enter the Matrix. But this trailer looks dope. Like, Keanu is having a big moment, as always, and he is great in this. Looks like some fan favorite characters are back, but it also looks like some new characters. The person with the blue hair really like caught my eye. They seem very interesting. I don't know what's going on there. And then, of course, it all revolves around the whole theme and idea of red pill, blue pill, which I will say, mm-hmm. I saw on Twitter a few days ago, and I don't know, like, I think people were just getting hype for this to come out.
I mean, the teasers, there was a teaser site where you could click red pill or blue pill and you get like this snippets of it. I am all in. I'm ready to like just give myself over to whatever story Lana Wachowski's trying to tell. Mm-hmm. I
Special
have loved everything
great,
that Wachowski's,
by the way,
looks incredible. Looks incredible. Like, looks like it still looks like a Matrix movie too, which is what I was kind of worried about.
Newer.
But newer and fresher. Yeah. I have loved everything they've done post-Matrix, to be honest, too. Like,
yes.
All masterpieces in their own way. Cloud Atlas, incredible film. Speed Racer.
So good.
Speed Racer is good. Sense8 is good. People will fight about some of these things, but there was so much like bursting of ideas and stuff in all their work that I cannot just wait. So anyway, we're going to move on from this. I just want to drop a recommendation here. There has been a lot of great analysis of the sequels, but I think the best one I've seen so far is called The Matrix Sequels Are Good, Actually. It's on YouTube by the account Curio. And that dives into like how the sequels are also like very much like trans allegories and how they're basically like sending a very clear message about people who mistook messages from the first movie too. Like, the red pill thing is gross, and that happened even before like alt-right Twitter existed and alt-right online stuff. People were taking the first Matrix in very bad ways, in very like sexist ways, and the sequels are like a direct response to that too.
And the last thing I'll say is that I don't know if people already knew this, but the trailer does say that the Resurrections movie is coming out Christmas, right? Around Christmas.
Yeah, December.
December
is what they're saying so far at this point. We'll see. Only in cinemas. I do hate it when they say only in cinemas when we're in the middle of a pandemic, but we will see. Like, that's really the only thing. I want to be put into a Matrix pod and wake up when this movie is out. That is what I am super excited for. Let's move away from the Matrix and let's talk about friendly machines, friendly robots, like iRobot's latest Roomba, the Roomba J7 Plus. They just announced this overnight. I wrote it up. The big key is that this one has a camera and computer vision technology to detect objects, you know, the obstacles, things in your way, and also poop. Poop. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Great. Sherlyn, you do not have pets, so I'm not sure you're aware that this is a potential issue, but hey, the biggest nightmare of leaving your Roomba on a schedule and just like leaving the house, which I do occasionally, is your pet makes a mess and the Roomba is just a dumb little vacuum bot and it just like will suck it up and spread it around your house and
keep going. I've been on the internet. I've seen the pictures. It's not fun. It did not look like a fun time was had by anyone.
It's a nightmare. So this new Roomba, the J7 Plus, is $849. it can basically see, it could see the poop. It could detect the poop. I talked to the CEO of iRobot about this, about their like poop their poop research, right? And they modeled stuff out of Play-Doh. They had employees send in photos, so they could build a machine learning model for poop.
Oh,
I think
gosh.
They may be the only company that has done this. But yeah, if this Roomba sees poop, it will mosey around it and keep cleaning. And they're also giving you a pet owner official promise, poop. If your Roomba does actually make contact with poop, they will just replace it for the first year. So that is kind of a nice thing. Because it's a good fail-safe, yeah.
Can I just say, like, uh-huh. That's the thing that I have an issue with, right? Like, if it's making all these promises, it's like, okay, the poop, you know, we will avoid it. And if it fails, you for sure want a new one because you clearly are going to have that poop kind of stuck in the motors and everything and smearing forever. But do you want a new one or do you just want a refund? Like, why would I just chance that again? Like, I would not. You
probably wouldn't chance it and you'd probably run it at different times. But hey, listen. I have Roombas pretty much on every floor right now. Roombas are great because I am very lazy and I would also like my house to be clean once in a while. So to have that, just like I clean up the floor and I tell the robot to do the thing and it goes around and does the thing, that is a really useful thing. So I think Roomba people and people who like robot vacuums are like into this. This just gives you another level to trust them. That's all. I think it's a smart move. It's weird too because... This Roomba is not as powerful as the S9 Plus I talked about a couple years ago. That one still sells for $12.99. That one is a more powerful Roomba, has like a square edge. This one's basically an updated Roomba i7 Plus, but I'm intrigued. And they also say they're going to bring these sensors and this camera and more intelligence to like future Roomba models down the line. So listen, Roombas are expensive. They're an extravagance. Not everybody needs it. But I've really liked following them for a while because it is the closest example of us living together with robots. You know, I got to pay attention to when the Matrix uprising is going to happen. It's probably going to be Roombas first at this point. Anyway, the Roomba J7 Plus, it detects poop.
Pet poop.
Good job.
Not human
Good
poop.
Good job, iRobot.
Specifically pet poop, yes.
It can probably detect human poop too, which, hey, I have a toddler and poop is everywhere. Poop is a fact of life, so sure. Thank you, Roomba, for detecting poop.
Well done.
Let's move on to what we've been working on. I have spent the last week testing out the RAV4 Prime, which is a car I've been waiting to drive and play with for a very long time. This is a plug-in hybrid from Toyota. It is the most high-tech RAV4 around because you could plug it into your wall at home, get around like 30 to 35 miles of electric driving. And then after that, it just like drives as a hybrid car. So there's none of the range anxiety you get with a Tesla or some other electric cars, but also far more efficiency for like when you want to do actual gas runs. And I think the stat for a lot of people is that like we rarely drive more than like 5 or 10 miles in a day unless you're commuting. Because of that, there's a good reason to have a little bit of electric power in your car because it means you won't really have to fill up the tank as much. I love this thing. It feels good. I'll be writing it up soon. I wish like I had time to like do a video on it because it is beautiful. It drives really well. It is so much better than my 2017 RAV4. And it is definitely a sign of like where Toyota's going, hopefully, and where I want to see the rest of the industry go. I think I talked about some things. Like, I think we talked about Toyota like preventing, like pushing back electric vehicle tech in a way too. So they've been disappointing me in that respect. There was a story about them like giving money to basically insurrectionist politicians, which they eventually walked back. So they've done some dumb things, but in terms of their tech, in terms of their car designs, I generally like lean towards them. So yeah, this is a very cool car. Cannot wait to play with it.
Toyota's also made some interesting assistive technology too. So I mean, I pay attention to them in that respect, but yeah,
exactly.
not so fun what the other stuff they're doing that's not so great.
What are you working on, Trillin?
I am working on being a better person. No.
Good luck.
That. But but also I'm just kind of getting out. Like I came back from a time off and have been trying to catch up. And then of course, you know, with Apple coming up, we're ramping up the preparation for that. So we will be hosting a live stream come September 14th, which is when the Apple event is. Right after Apple finishes, we will be live on the Engadget YouTube channel. Me and UK Bureau Chief Matt Smith to talk about all the announcements, to share in our disappointment or bask in our excitement together with you. We shall see. We'll have a fun time. But then it's event season. It's September, October. I'm no sleep till Thanksgiving, I think. But that's behind the scenes stuff that I'm working on. I'm also
The overworkers cover of the Beastie Boys song, I guess.
Yes.
So,
no sleep till
Thanksgiving because I'm so busy. Yeah.
And also, like I said, the what to expect from Apple's event is coming shortly on Engadget's site or YouTube channel. So, check that out.
Very cool. Let's move on to our pop culture picks. I feel like we're going to be talking about something, but anything you want to mention, Trillin, before
mine will be a good follow-up to our special thing.
Okay.
I think.
Okay, so I'll go first then.
Yes.
Because I saw Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings, which I know you have seen, and I loved it. I love it so much. This is top five MCU for me. Well, the best choreography in the MCU.
So
the choreography is so good. Tony Leung just elevates this thing to insane heights. Like so much so where I feel bad for Simu Liu. Because I love Simo. He's really fun. He has great comedic timing. His action, he can move well. Like he's an action
great.
Guy.
Yeah.
When this movie needs to slow down and have him emote or do actorly things, I'm like, okay, all right.
He's good at the comedy
especially.
Actorly things.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
you
drama,
can't put inexperienced actors up against Tony Leung. Like that's the thing. Like Tony is such a god, right?
Such a master.
In cinema. And then in this movie, he's basically presented as the villain, but I think more of an anti-hero.
God, so human. The way he's humanized that character is so beautiful and brilliant. So
good.
I my cousin also finally saw it, I think recently, and I had told my entire family to come talk to me after they've seen the movie. And he's also based in America, and he's like, yo, I think you're the only person I can talk to about this. But he felt so, I think a lot of the struggle of being an Asian kid with your parents who are tough love sorts, right? I for him, he felt that very strongly. I think I felt it, but I think I have had some distance from the show. And also,
oh, man.
My dad
this movie,
never beat me up like that.
But it's more like the emotional scars from Asian parents. This movie, the allegory is what if your father was a warlord who lived for 1,000 years and, was really tough on you in many direct ways? Tony Leung just really sells that.
So yeah. I've also, as I am wont to do after I've fallen in love with something, I also watched a lot of interviews with the various actors. I mean, I watched GQ had a video up where Tony Leung just explains all of his, iconic characters from his career, and this was one of them, and the way he kind of explained how he didn't want to just be a villain, and he wanted to find a more interesting way to portray this character. The way he describes Wen Wu, which is the character he plays, who is, by the way, the actual Mandarin, he was like, oh, this is a guy who had a rough childhood. Wen Wu had a rough childhood. And then he wants to love his kids, but he doesn't know how to love his kids because he doesn't know how to love himself to begin with.
He doesn't have the tools to love his children and his family. Yeah.
So ridiculously, that hit home. I was like, holy crap, this guy is amazing. And then, the action. Okay, so here's my takeaway from the show, right? Simu Liu is great. And what he's done to get this role, and a lot of people ask him about the tweets, because after Captain America and Black Panther and all of that, he would tweet at Marvel or Kevin Feige and be like, hey, how about that Shang-Chi movie? Hey, even before he was, I think, ever in the consideration for the role. So I had to give him a lot of credit for sort of what he's done here. I don't think it's all him, obviously, but he's brought a level of likability to this character.
Sure.
But I also felt when I first started, when the movie first started, I was like, this isn't a Marvel movie. I was like, this can't be. This is a wuxia movie. This is a martial arts sword fighting movie at the beginning. Then it got
it goes hard on that too.
Hard,
and we saw glimpses of this in the trailer. I'm like, Is this going to scratch my Wuxia itch, basically? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it does within the first 5 minutes. I'm like, okay, yeah.
Right there. I was on board. It's Qing Gong. It's everything that if you're, like, if you grew up on Wuxia like I did, it's, like, everything you know about, like, martial artists and, like, what that, like, is known for. You get it, all the Qing Gong stuff. But also, then it goes into Marvel territory, and then it comes right out and becomes a third kind of movie, which I don't know if we'll be spoiling it a bit much.
That would be spoiling. Like, yeah.
So I'm not going to describe that last X stuff because it feels very spoilery. But there's also a bunch of tropes there that I identified that I didn't really feel were necessary. Like, it's very, like, repetitive when it comes to Asian film anyway. I did love Michelle Yeoh. Chen Fala was amazing also. I used to not like her. I am a convert now. Awkwafina was Awkwafina. And everyone else was like, really, the cast was great too. I think they all
Awkwafina was Awkwafina. I do wonder if she's getting, like, maybe a little overplayed at this point. Like, that's the thing. She's everywhere. Yeah. Yeah, I know.
She's not Singaporean. Also, she should not have been in Crazy Rich Asians, but anyway.
I mean, there's all, if you want to talk about representation of that movie, there's a other road we could go down there. Ooh, I love Shang-Chi. I cannot wait. It is, I think it's what, less than 40 days now until it's available on Disney streaming. So yes. Countdown for that. Tight, if you can't make it to theater, if you do go to theater, please be safe. My strategy has been, I can sneak out, like, during the day on weekends when, like, nobody's at the theater, basically, right. or you know, some days
or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And matinee go. There's one person, maybe nobody. I saw Candyman. There was nobody in the theater. So I felt pretty safe doing that, but yeah, I would not go to, like, a prime time or an opening night screening at this point. I really enjoyed it. I did a full review over at my movie podcast at thefilmcast.com. What is the thing you want to add on to this, Sherlyn?
So my recommendation, in addition to Shang-Chi, is a sort of also a comic-based show, which is, after I saw Suicide Squad, I was, like, obsessed, and I started watching everything related to that world. So I saw the original Suicide Squad. I saw Birds of Prey. And then I ended up going, like, oh my gosh, I actually kind of really like Harley Quinn. So I started to watch the Harley Quinn animated series on HBO Max. Holy crap, this show is good. Like, the writing is smart. The characters are so likable. Lake Bell plays Poison Ivy, and she's by far my favorite character. The way she adds, like, vocal mannerisms to this person, like, so real. The way they talk is, like, in our world. It's not, like, removed. And I think it's brought back a love of comic series for me. Like, I used to love X-Men, watching X-Men as a kid growing up, the cartoon. But then, like, I moved away from that because I felt like they were for kids and they're getting a little bit boring. But no, adult superhero DC series, holy, this was really great. So it's funny. It's not as irreverent, I want to say, as Archer, but it's not as smart, like, in terms of the writing. Like, Archer
It is like Archer style humor, but I think Archer, like, went downhill after a couple seasons. So yeah, whereas this feels fresher. Yeah,
this is definitely fresher. More I hate to say this, but it's more millennial friendly. I almost feel like it's very, like,
built. Millennial friendly. Is that our new judgment for a thing? Okay,
that's my judgment. It soothed me because it was using my sort of words. Anyway, Harley Quinn, the animated series, there's two seasons on HBO Max. I think a third is coming. It was originally on DC, and then now, you know, the new home is HBO Max, and the third season is supposed to be, like, designed for the HBO Max audience. So who knows what's going to happen with it, but it's acted really well. Kaylee Cuoco, I thought, was unrecognizable as Harley Quinn at first, until after a while I was like, oh, okay, I can hear her. But what a great series. Go check it out.
Great. And actually, I'll tap in one other recommendation here, just because I'm in, like, Tony Leung mode.
He's so great.
At this point. Yeah, he is so great. Have you seen The Grand Master, Sherlyn?
Oh, so the one where he plays Ip Man. No, I haven't seen it, but I saw where in that GQ interview where he talked about it. Do you know he broke his hand twice filming that show? Jesus Christ.
I did know that. So Grandmaster, this is Wong Kar-wai's film. And Wong Kar-wai, a director I love, you know, who is really into, like, these moody dramas. He has done, like, martial arts films before, but it took him a while to, like, get back into the genre. And The Grandmaster, which was released in 2013, is this, like, gorgeous love letter to martial arts cinema, but also to Tony Leung and his beautiful eyes. It is fantastic because it's very unconventional. It is very much like an art movie that will also be, that will bust out into being like a kick-ass movie at certain times too. I think it was streaming in certain places.
I saw it there on Netflix, like, I think.
Yeah, it was streaming there. Just check it out. Like, watch the opening fight of that movie. Like, one of the most beautiful rain set fights I've ever seen. So there is some CG in it, but it is like, I think the elegance of what they do, actual choreography wise, is worth checking out. So that's pretty much it. Anything else you want
to
add, Trillin?
I am so used to thinking of Donnie Yen as like my canon Ip Man that like I will have a hard time thinking of Tony Leung, but Tony Leung, yeah. Tony Leung, you know what I mean?
So I mean, this is more like, this is the serious Ip Man. This is the one where it's like, it is a little darker, it's a little moodier. Whereas I think the Donnie Yen movies are fun, but they're like comic book movies. There's like Ip Man as a superhero.
There's more action,
More action. Whereas this one is like about his the love he can't quite, you know, achieve and how broken his life is at times. And also Tony Leung being just beautiful. Like, just...
Of course.
Yeah, I think that movie took them years to shoot because of how complex it was. So you should,
because he broke his arm so many times. Yes. Well, that's it for the episode, everyone. Thank you as always for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, and I podcast about movies and TV at The Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
If you want to send me robots that don't smear poop all over the place, I'm at Sherlinlo on Twitter. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes, and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify.
We'd like to take a second to thank our sponsor, Mouser Electronics. Not only does Mouser stock the world's widest selection of semiconductors and electronic components, they also offer an original content series called Empowering Innovation Together. Each month, EIT takes a deep dive into the hottest tech trends, and this month the focus is on intelligent transportation systems. Check out podcasts, articles, infographics, videos, and more at mouser.com/empowering-innovation. Poop is everywhere. Poop is a fact of life.